Welcome to today's interview. We have returning guest Kristen Magan, who's an Air Force veteran, and she is an industrial hygienist, which means she's an expert in airflow and aerosolized bioweapons and contaminants and heavy metals and all kinds of things like that. She has her own show with WeThePatriotsUSA.com. It's called Vets and Visionaries, and she's a fan favorite too, by the way. We should have you on more often, Kristen. Welcome to the show today. It's great to have you.
It's great to be back, Mike.
We miss you because you're so knowledgeable. And I think one of the things, this occurs to me a lot. I hear people talking about, you know, 6 feet and you're safe from COVID. And I hear people talking about masks. And I'm always thinking, they should talk to Kristen about that, you know? So you're in my mind a lot about these things. But tell us right now, I mean, here we are in the post-COVID era. California just put on some kind of a new mask mandate, or was it just for government workers or what? Who is insane enough to still be wearing useless masks at this point?
Liberals. No, my understanding is that it has happened in just certain counties in California involving, I think, medical centers and certain government offices.
Uh-huh.
And I told people, because the haters will say, oh no, Kristen Megan's 15 minutes are over, but stay with me. I've been doing this for 16 years. Okay. It's been longer than 15 minutes, but I told people masks will come back. So I'm going to continue to talk about it. Uh-huh. And they did. And until, yes, it is a violation of our rights, but until we attack the science associated with masking, they're going to keep doing it. And like,
yes.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I'm not disrespecting the doctors that do talk about it. Cause like my friend, like Dr. Peter McCullough will talk about masks, but he knows who the subject matter experts are. A lot of these frontline doctors work with us behind the scenes before they speak on it. And I respect that so much. But people do need to remember that the subject matter experts on exposure controls, which includes engineering controls, like you said, airflow, PPE, that is industrial hygienists. And I have to add to that industrial hygienists that do not work for the government. Because as you saw, we had so much regulatory capture between OSHA and the EPA, you name it. The alphabet soup has been captured. And I still have all the government documents when they told you masks did not work for aerosolized virus before they took them off the web, because they're in my training slides. So
yes,
I thought I would get a break, Mike, but you know, we do have an election coming up. So of course we have to bring back the big bad wolf.
Well, Kristen, speaking of the big bad wolf, there's a much bigger question I need to ask you here today. And I think you're the right expert to answer this. Israel is poised to launch a major attack against Iran before election day, they say now. This is going to be some very significant attack, and it's likely that Iran will retaliate against Israel, and at some point that might go nuclear. But I want to talk about that in a second. But in the United States, we know there are terrorists who have crossed the open border and that they have explosive vests, and some of my other sources have said on the record that there is radiological material with some of these kinetic vests. So we're talking about a dirty bomb suicide vest, which with a small amount of material, you know, it's probably like 100 grams of radiological material or something. And of course, we're not talking about fusion or fission, but we're just talking about dispersion of a decaying radioisotope. Now, my question to you, Kristen, because you're the expert here, if somebody were to walk in, let's just say in the middle of like Times Square, New York City, and they have a suicide vest with a dirty bomb material on it, and they pull the cord or whatever, punch the button, boom, they blow up. Talk to us about what are the implications in terms of the dispersion and the risks from a dirty bomb suicide vest event at ground level in a major U.S. city.
In a major U.S. city, I mean, wow. I mean, when I was in the Air Force, we, you know, exercise for these types of things. And the thing is, when you're dealing with radiation also, is that with dirty bombs, you can have not just radiation, but you can have other chemicals and toxicants. And then you have to think about the other things it mixes with. And then depending on the time of year and the weather conditions, this can wipe out not only individuals, but it can leach into, like we just talked about airflow. Like even if people think that they're out of like a blast zone, think about in a big city, how many HVAC handlers there are, just a minute amount being sucked through the HVAC handler and then up through the emissions, like the exhaust pipes. This can go far and wide, not to mention just the actual physical damage, but this stuff messes with the half-life of these types of materials are so long that it would be in it's a surface contaminant. It's penetrable through your organs. And honestly, this is what's scary about any sort of like nuclear or radiological attack, is that there's really not much we can do to prepare for it. I know people talk about taking forms of iodine and things like that, but at the end of the day, just sheltering in place is your best option and turning off your air handlers. But these are the things that I trained for 9 years in active duty. And I never in my, I'm 42 now, I never in my adult life thought like this is something we'd be talking about as possible.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we're on the brink of this. But and it's because
I received a tip from a source, actually a former instructor of mine, a former martial arts instructor who trains federal agents. He said that among a group that he was training, they were saying that they had been instructed to have a safe room in their home, to have 2 to 3 weeks of anticipated lockdowns, so food and water for 2 to 3 weeks, and importantly, to make sure they are able to seal their doors and windows. What does that tell you as an expert of what the risk might be?
It just reminds me of being on active duty and having different threat conditions on each installation. Like I said, sheltering in place is the best thing you can do. And if there's people that are actually being told to prepare for this, that tells me there's intel somewhere that there's a high probability of this happening. And I think the problem with our country is we are so ignorant to think like we live in such like a air quote free country. People think that this can't happen to us. And the sealing in place thing is massive, because when you just said sealing the doors, like I said, we're talking about radiation. We're talking about other dispersed chemicals that can be mixed in with dirty bombs. And if they're aerosolized, depending on how they're deployed, they can seep right through a door crack. And it does not take a lot for this to harm you and any of the items that you are also sheltering in place with. That's why I tell people when you shelter in place, make sure that you have more than anything like protein shakes, like things that are heavily sealed. Because anything, even just opening a bag or a can, like if your air is contaminated, you want to get things that you can stick a straw through, if that makes sense. That's also part of the training that we did, because it's the things that you can't see are often the most harmful. And as a former radiation safety officer, I let my credentials expire years ago. That was the one thing we tried to hone in on people when we dealt with radiological risk and impacts, is that you can't see it and it's too late when you notice it's there. But I'll tell you, there's things I'm doing in my own home just because I'm not trying to be paranoid, but I'm trying to be mindful and get ahead of this. So I did see your post on that, and that definitely raised my antennas.
Oh, okay. You saw that. Okay, great. So just continuing from what you said there, if there is then a nuclear war event, which could happen in the Middle East, it could happen in the next few days, technically, it could happen with Russia. It could happen anywhere. Then we're going to have global fallout. And I've said this before, that we will then have a bifurcated food market. There will be pre-fallout food, and then there will be post-fallout food. Pre-fallout food will have a premium value for obvious reasons. Post-fallout food may be contaminated with cesium-137 or whatever is in the fallout zone, depending on the winds and so on. Talk to us about that idea of pre-fallout food versus post-fallout food, and how will this affect agriculture and food supply chains in your view?
Well, even if food is grown like inside a facility, again, everything comes in through the air handler. So it's very hard to keep new food clean post incident. And that's why it's like good to stockpile food to get ahead of things. But honestly, once the soil is contaminated too, like until there are like different types of fungi and mushrooms that can eat away at these contaminants, but it would be several years before you can grow new healthy food from like a blast zone or an incident site. And I wish I could provide like more hope, but that is the big fear about any nuclear incident or radiological incident, is it is highly contaminant to all sources. And we talked before, I think on your show, about synergistic toxicity that does include radiation, not just toxicants. And it's in the air. So it's like landing on the food, even if it was like already breaking through the soil when this happened. It's just, there is no hope for the food post apocalyptic incident. I mean, this is why like so many shows are sponsored by these, you know, food reserve type companies, because it is a very real threat now more than ever.
Right. So let's explore that a little bit more. And I want to compare notes with you on this. So my understanding is that it takes about 10 half-lives for a radioisotope to be considered really completely gone. So for cesium-137, we're talking about 3 centuries. And this is the reason why farmland around Chernobyl today is still not farmable, even though that event was, I think, 1986. Is that consistent with your training about 10 half-lives, or what do you say?
Yeah, and just a quick, short, crazy story. When I was in the Air Force, we used cesium-137 to calibrate our equipment. And we had a little piece that was for a piece of equipment go missing.
Oh, wow.
And we found it, but what we had to do to report that it was missing, that was a highlight of my career. It got lost inside the laboratory by a new airman, but it's like this little tiny disc. Yeah. And we need it for our equipment. And just to tell you how hazardous cesium-137 is. And there are other forms of radiation. I think radiation is also the hardest thing for people to understand, because you have surface, different penetrations. And, you know, too bad we're just not being attacked by alpha. You know, we could just go under a blanket, but that's not what we're dealing with here. So, you know, you were pretty accurate on that. And I honestly think I never think the government's here to save us, but we run drills, you know, sometimes of sheltering in place, and people think, oh, there's a false flag coming. But honestly, we have a real threat here, and we should be running drills like this.
Yes.
You know, it's reminiscent of like the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Like, these people had 4 minutes to shelter in place with no instruction. So, or mask mandates, no instruction of how to do it, dispose of it. So I think we should be running like community-based drills on this and educate people so that we can be more proactive than reactive.
Right, exactly. And I love exploring this topic with you. I think you're right on that, but I want to cover some more basic things here for the audience, because there is a lot of public confusion about radiation or even what is a half-life and so on. But let me mention this. So cesium-137, we know in agriculture, the reason you don't want to eat food grown on farmlands contaminated with cesium-137, or you don't want to drink milk from cows who graze on that land, because the cow concentrates the cesium-137 into the milk and cheese, right? So you would be consuming a large amount of cesium-137, which has a half-life of about 29 years. So it's intense enough to really damage you in a human lifetime easily. It can kill you with a very small amount. But some people think that if food... Like, they think there's a way to eliminate the radiation in foods grown in cesium-137. Like, there's some, like, you can wave this rock over it or something, and or this microchip, and then the radiation is going to be gone. And I'm like, nah, not really. That's can you talk about that? Some of the misconceptions is people think they can get rid of radiation with magic or something.
You know, I've had to teach radiation to elementary school kids before, so I know how to like break this down in a more understandable way. But like you said, dependent on the type of radiation, if we're talking about cesium, you have to understand that there are certain forms of radiation that will attack like moisture and mucus and things like that. But when it comes to food that is contaminated with this, and you talked about half-life, for people to understand, it's basically like, think of like metabolism, how long it's like not as strong because it's like metabolized out, kind of like waste out of our body.
It is turned into energy in this case.
Yes, it transforms. Yeah. And then when you talk about the milk, it's how it alters protein. It different forms of radiation actually can hold on longer into different parts of the human body systems and different types of cells. It's very complex. But no, you can't just like put the contaminated food near something or put it in a machine. It's there. Radiation is the hardest thing to clean up. And that is why you see areas where there's been radioactive spills or incidents are still uninhabitable, because while natural life forms that are there, like plants, can basically evolve to thrive, they are never the same. And when our food is ruined, our food is ruined. And then you also have to think about the seeds that we get from that food. So this is why people actually need to stockpile seeds, because we get seeds from food. It's a constant reproduction, as you know, it's a cycle. And you put a huge wedge in that cycle. And I just tell you what, I'm not going to eat the bugs because they're also going to be contaminated.
No, that's a really good point, that you need to stock up on pre-fallout seeds. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're 100% correct. But let's continue to explore this. So if I have a garden and I'm growing green beans, let's say, and then there's a nuclear event and there's fallout dust that is radioactive, that crop right there, technically, I could wash the dust off those green beans, and those green beans could be decontaminated by washing the dust. But the next crop of green beans grown in the soil will uptake cesium because it mimics potassium, and then that will become incurred radiation in the tissue of the green beans. And then you can't eat that because then it becomes incurred in your tissues as those green beans become your body. Right? Am I correct about this, or what would you add to it?
No, it's very, very hard to decon radiation contamination. It's very, very difficult. And it's not to sit here and like push fear and panic. It's just that if we're still talking about cesium, also where it bioaccumulates in the body.
Yes.
You have to understand the impact of the exposure and then the waste that is produced from the exposure. And then you have to deal with, what are we doing with the waste? Where's the human waste going? I'm talking from fecal matter to urine, to breast milk, to just sweat and our wastewater treatment facilities. Like, I don't know how to really convey to people how bad radiation exposures through attacks are, because it's, you have to almost think of like, you know, how many parents don't allow glitter in their homes?
Is that right?
It's like, it just, it never, you can't really clean it up. It is so difficult to clean it up, because when you always try to control something at the source, it is highly impossible to do after a radiological event because of the multiple factors that it has spread to. And these are things that the average people don't think about, but you can be as clean as you want. But once you're exposed, again, your body is now a hazard.
Right, right. Okay. All right. Let me slightly change the focus here, but ask you for more expertise. There are multiple radioisotopes generated in a nuclear detonation, depending on a lot of factors, right? The source fuel, the method of fission, and so on. But one of those is iodine-131, which I believe has about a 7-day half-life or something around 1 week. And I've heard people say before, oh, I'm not afraid of nuclear fallout because I have iodine. And I'm like, no, that can help you just from iodine-131. It doesn't block cesium. It doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't block strontium-90 or all these other isotopes, right? So talk to us about that too. There's a lot of misconception. People think, if I take iodine, I'm bulletproof from radiation now. Like, no.
Well, it's when you said that, all I could think about was, it's no different than a mask does not protect you from an aerosolized virus, but it will protect you from large bacterial droplets. So different forms of radiation affect different types of the body. So you have certain radiation that, like most people know, attacks your thyroid. Some of it permeates through your skin. It has target organs. Like I said, some of it reaches for mucus, so it affects the eyes. So as you have to look at the different contaminants that can be used in radiological incidents and realize there's not a one size fits all. You can't just take nacitidine and think, oh, I'm okay. You can't just like throw on a thyroid collar or something. You know, time distance and shielding is key in any form of radiological attack. But this is why I tell you, it's very difficult to provide hope in this situation unless you have an underground bunker and you already have a microbiome of like food growing in your underground bunker and its own freestanding HVAC system. And we just aren't ready to deal with this, Mike. We aren't. And I'm glad we're talking about this, because people need to understand the importance of world peace for this very, very reason.
Absolutely. I've been a strong advocate for peace here, and I've been a very vocal critic of all those who are pushing for war. You know, we have U.S. senators like, bomb Iran, bomb Iran. And even Trump himself is like, we're gonna destroy Iran. And I'm like, we should think about that, because I'm pretty sure Iran has nuclear warheads at this point. And, you know, Pakistan does. That's well known. Russia does. And if we get on this, I mean, talk to us about the dangerous escalation ladder that we could find ourselves on here if we don't pull back from the brink of annihilation.
Yeah, we have a multiple layer of threats that we're dealing with, and people need to take this very seriously. America is known as having a strong defense. I think we're irrational offense, but that's for another episode. And what happens is if we have this type of World War III officially breaks out, you know, if Congress actually approved it, and we have radiological warfare being utilized, we are going to lose our military advantage because radiation can also affect our equipment, how it operates. I mean, people think about interference in your home Wi-Fi through EMF and RF that occurs. Like, for example, in my home, a light pole was interfering with my RF.
Oh, wow.
For my it's like crazy. So what I'm saying is, not only do you have the impediment on the quality of our food, the health of our people, the health of our military, but our ability to defend ourselves further with any counteractions can be inhibited because of the radiation fallout. And I really just don't like to think about it, because things that I've trained for in the military, I sure as hell hope never comes to fruition. But people are going to want to, if you're a prepper and you're someone that really wants to know what you can do, you need to learn how to shelter in place. You need to go on the internet and look about how to properly shelter in place with sealing your windows, with the proper tape, turning off your HVAC system and your vents, get gas masks. Sadly, gas masks can be made for children. You need to understand, like living in Oklahoma City, I had a tornado shelter kit and I did drills with my kids. We live in a world now, until something changes with, you know, world conflict, that we have to be ready to react, kind of like a fire drill, having a ladder out of a window. We are at a point now where I feel like we're back, you know, in the days where people were doing bomb drills, nuclear bomb drills in their school. You know, we thought we were past that. We absolutely are not.
Absolutely. And while you were talking, I was wanting to bring up a list. This is from the EPA of the most common radioisotopes generated in a nuclear weapon detonation. And the four most common it mentions are americium-241, cesium-137, which we've spoken about, iodine-131, and then strontium-90. And I believe also strontium-90, isn't that used in medical imaging equipment?
Yes.
All right, so...
Yeah, and it's highly regulated. That's yes. What's so funny is that oftentimes in many different facets that we're talking about here, things that I deal with in my profession of protecting workers from the hazards, I know what that would be like on a grand scale out in the average like community public health situation.
Right.
And so, that it is very, very scary how we have to treat just the waste of medical procedures or things that are used to calibrate medical equipment or, you know, work with lasers. There's a lot of medical uses for radiological materials and they're highly regulated. Radiation safety and laser safety is one of the most important and high-paying jobs in healthcare.
All right, this is Mike Adams jumping in here. You just watched the first half of my interview with Kristen Megan. The other half, the second half, will play tomorrow. And the reason I'm dividing it up is just in the interest of time. It was quite lengthy, but also the subject matter in the second half is really powerful. We pivot into America's failing military, the failure of America's ability to project power, and its moral failures, where America is no longer the country that is the good guys of the world. America has become the terror nation that terrorizes the world and destroys the world and threatens the world. And this is a very sad realization, because Kristen and I both really love America. We love the founding fathers, the Constitution. We love what America is supposed to be, but it has been perverted far from that, and it has become an instrument of evil in the world. So tomorrow we'll run that interview as a second half, but thank you for listening. Thank you for your support at healthrangerstore.com, where together we raise over $500,000 in food aid for the storm victims. Some loads have gone to North Carolina and others we're preparing for Florida, but over $500,000 in certified organic lab tested food. And now we've got back in stock at the Health Rangers store, turmeric. Show what I've got on my desk here. We've got turmeric powder and that's turmeric root powder, which is lab tested. Normally, a lot of turmeric root powder has high lead in it. Of course, we do the laboratory testing to make sure that it doesn't. And so you've got super clean turmeric root powder, certified organic, available once again, brand new batch, very difficult to find. Plus, we've got collagen peptides in stock, both plain and chocolate flavored collagen peptides. All those formulations are available now at healthrangerstore.com. We've got coconut chips coming in and all kinds of things. Cocoa Love, Cocoa Energize, lots of superfoods, lots of personal care products, all meticulously formulated and laboratory tested items that are on sale this week. And by the way, many categories here: supplements, preparedness, personal care, food and beverage, and home care. Now, let me show you too. We've got tinctures of turmeric available right now. You see the small 2 ounce tinctures there. Really amazing formulas, delicious. They're in glycerin with a very strong turmeric potency. They contain all of the constituents that are naturally found in turmeric, including curcumin, which is the critical ingredient that you want to get in. So many benefits for turmeric. I can't even mention them all right here, but you can do your research, learn about turmeric. It can benefit people in so many ways, especially as we gain in years. You'll find turmeric to be more and more useful in so many ways to help support your natural health. It's really, I mean, I have turmeric in my my smoothie here every day. That's why it's a little bit orange. I have chocolate and turmeric and bananas and whey protein and coconut water. I'm consuming turmeric every single day, and I have done so for many, many years. By the way, you can also, if you want to sprout your own broccoli, you can get some of the similar benefits that turmeric offers, or you can grow your own turmeric root and then just harvest it and blend it up. It's always great to make your own superfoods, or you could just get it from us, and we've gone through all the laboratory testing, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast and mold testing, total plate count testing, as well as all the other tests we do. But for turmeric, lead is the number one contaminant that you typically find across the industry. Very difficult for us to find clean batches of turmeric, but we have it now. HealthRangerStore.com. And then finally, let me repeat, thanks to your sales support, your purchasing of our products, we have been able to raise over $500,000 in food donations for the storm victims. Those trucks are in the process of rolling out. We're going to be able to help probably tens of thousands of people with these food donations. We couldn't do it without your support. And I really want to thank you for that. I thought maybe we would raise $100,000. I was shocked when it exceeded $500,000. And we've got videos from the warehouse, and I'll show you more photos as this is all sent out and distributed to people. It's an amazing thing to experience this level of support from you, so that together we can help Americans in need, and we can help provide clean food and superfoods and real nutrient density to people who need it. One of the things about, you know, all the food rescue operations in North Carolina, Tennessee, Florida, is that mostly what people get is processed junk food. They get like soda and energy drinks and, I don't know, like snack chips and whatever. I'm thinking they need real food, and that's what we specialize in. So with your help, we're able to get them real food, real nutrition that can sustain them even through the coming winter. It's going to get cold in North Carolina very soon, but a lot of people there, thousands of people there, are going to have our Ranger buckets or our mega buckets of food. They're going to have nutritious food to help them through the winters. And God bless those people, because they've been financially wiped out by the damage there, by the weaponized weather systems. Farms are destroyed, homes are lost. You know how bad it is. So we're doing everything that we can to help, but we can't do it without your help. So help us, and also help yourself. Shop at healthrangerstore.com. You'll get the cleanest superfoods, the most nutrient-dense, lab-tested, certified organic products for health, for storable food, for personal care, for home care, and you'll help us help those Americans in need who are suffering the devastating effects of weaponized weather systems. These are very difficult times, but with your help and with God's blessings, we can make it through this together. So thank you for your support. God bless you all. I'm Mike Adams, HealthRangerStore.com.